everybody. I'm Melissa Campanelli, the co-founder of the Women in Retail Leadership Circle, which is a membership-based community of executive women at leading retailers and brands. Joining me today is Fern Malice, the founder of New York Fashion Week and Fern Malice LLC. Fern has also been named one of Women in Retail's and Burns Communications Group's 25 most inspirational women leaders this year. And that is a list of inspirational retail and fashion leaders selected in honor of International Women's Day. Today, we're going to talk about Fern's illustrious career, her leadership legacy, her thoughts on work-life integration, and so much more. Thank you for joining me today, Fern.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
So I'm just going to jump right in. You have such a great background. Can you walk us through your career, including how you came up with the idea for New York Fashion Week and how you were able to get it off the ground?
I started my career at Mademoiselle magazine way back in 1969 when I was selected as one of the 20 guest editors, when they had that extraordinary guest editor competition every year, where they got 20 students from all over the country. We came in and we edited the August issue, which was the back to school issue, when people got dressed and went to stores to buy clothing to go back to school. Every department store had a big program for that. Now you just need a new pair of jeans, I think. But that's when my career started, and I worked at Mademoiselle then for 6-7 years. And one of the jobs I had there was a merchandising editor, and I traveled to every department store in America doing events for them and doing all the special, bringing all the magazine issues to life. So I was going to stores in Chicago when it was called Marshall Field and not Macy's, and when Higbee's was a store, and Meyer and Frank and Bird Dines, and all the big department stores had names in each of their cities. Now they're all Macy's. So that retail landscape has changed a lot. And then my career moved on, and I eventually, I became fashion director at Gimbel's East, which if people remember that, when Gimbel's had a store on 86th Street and Lexington Avenue.
I remember
a new store on the Upper East Side, which was quite a revelation to everybody because it was always Gimbel's and Macy's down at Herald Square. And I mean, Gimbel's is gone now. I mean, almost every place I ever worked is gone now. But Gimbel's East was fabulous because it was unlike the downtown store, it was catering to the highest end, you know, income of people in the Upper East Side. And it was a lot of women, young women with strollers who were all lived there and, you know, shopping all day long. And that's when I really started learning the market. I was working with the different buyers and went into the market, into the early fashion shows back then, and, you know, built a boutique for DKNY and built a boutique for Diane von Furstenberg. And we had Calvin Klein and had all, and I worked on creating the windows and the shops and all the in-store events and promotions. Eventually I left there and started my own public relations company called Fern Malice Public Relations. And it started with fashion clients like Selma Weiser from Cher Avery and doing small openings in her boutique on Broadway and various other fashion clients. And it shifted to interior design and architecture because I wound up working in an office where I had a desk with two of my very dearest friends who were architects and interior designers who were at that time, to put this in perspective, designing Studio 54.
Wow.
So that was that was a very heady time. But I had a wonderful time doing my own business, working with all the interior design firms, the fabric firms, the lighting firms, the furniture companies, eventually the International Design Center in Long Island City that opened up. One of my first assistants, and then she went back to college. And then when she graduated from Vassar, she came to work for me, was Jane Hertzmark, who's now Jane Hertzmark Huddis.
Yes.
Who's the global president of Estee Lauder, probably the most important woman in the cosmetic business. And Jane worked with me for 6 years.
Wow.
And we, you know, she's still like family to me. Eventually, then I left the design center when there was a massive recession in New York in the late 80s and early 90s. And threw my hat in the ring when I saw that the CFDA was looking for executive director. And I was the last one in the door when they narrowed the search down from hundreds of resumes and, you know, 30 or 40 meetings. And And they had five finalists, and there I was. I threw my hat in just in time. And long story short, I was selected to be the next director of the CFDA.
Wow.
And that changed the career trajectory. And that was in 1991, 1992. And it was an extraordinary time. You know, it was 10 years. And that under that, at that time, when I joined the CFDA, it was market week. And I said I'd start after that because I was hired on my birthday at the end of March. And I said I'd start in the middle of April. And the shows in New York were fashion week, but it was more like market week. If there were 50 shows, there were 50 locations. Nobody talked to each other. There was no centralized anything, no organization. And Michael Kors had a show in an empty loft space in Chelsea, a raw concrete space. And you know, when you're at shows in those kind of confined spaces, when you put the bass music on, if things aren't nailed down, they move. And it's so loud that the ceiling moved and the ceiling shattered.
Wow.
And plaster started coming down on the runway onto the shoulders of Linda and Cindy and Naomi. And Michael always had
all the models,
the top supermodels. But when plaster landed in the laps of Susie Menkes from the International Herald Tribune and Carrie Donovan from the New York Times, they wrote, "We live for fashion. We don't want to die for it." And nobody remembers what Michael showed that season. All they were looking at is like, where are the emergency exits if this gets worse? And
oh
I
goodness.
said, I think my job description just changed. And that was the impetus for looking for safe, sound places that were organized, centralized, and modernized to house the American fashion industry and the New York designers. And that's how the organization started. We called it 7th on 6th, because it was 7th Avenue moving to 6th Avenue into Bryant Park with several tents. And it changed the fashion industry.
That's amazing. I did not know that story, but it makes so much sense. I mean, there was probably so much great fashion and design and creativity, but there was no organization or no, you know, central location or central.
Just even a voice speaking for all of them. And,
yeah.
You know, and saying to Tommy, you can't do a show at 6 o'clock because somebody else is at 5 and it's like, it's not going to be ready. You won't have the same model. So people can't get there. I mean, we had a real sense of organization, putting it all together. And it was revolutionary. It was the first fashion week in the world that had corporate sponsors because that was my first job, was to raise money in order to make this happen. And that's a story in and of itself, raising the money from all the different magazines and companies that would benefit from an organized fashion week. And, you know, we started in the fall of 93 was the first shows in Bryant Park. And I stayed there organizing that for just under 20 years. First 10 at CFDA, and the second 10, it was bought by IMG, bought us.
Yep. Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Was it still part of the CFDA? But yeah, that makes sense. You walked us through some great examples of how you set new standards, elevated the industry. I mean, what more can we say? It's unbelievable. And it's still going strong today. So what are some other highlights that we could talk about and that you're most proud of? What I'm thinking about is what I've been hearing and seeing over the years is like your series at the 92nd Street Y. I know you've written some books. Can you tell the audience a little bit about that?
I'm extremely proud of having created Fashion Week in New York. That's probably the legacy that will stay with me. But in truth, the series of fashion icons with Fern Malice at the 92Y is something I am unbelievably proud of. It is a legacy set of interviews with leading personalities, designers, and fashion professionals. It's in its 13th, 14th year now. I've done about 65 interviews. Two books have come out of that so far, Fashion Lives, Fashion Icons with Fern Malice. The first book was launched in 2015 at Saks Fifth Avenue in 17 windows, all the sides windows and all of Fifth Avenue windows for 9 days had my book featured. That was
windows. I didn't know that. Wow. That's
it was
so cool.
It was fantastic. It was the first season that Mark Metrick became president there. And it was fantastic. All the designers came. And the second book, volume two, the first book was the first bunch of interviews, Norma Kamali, Calvin Klein, Donna Karan, Tommy, Betsy Johnson, Vera Wang, Kenneth Cole, Bruce Weber, Will Cunningham. I mean, it just had everybody. The second book was a little more European. It included, I had Valentino, Leonard Lauder, Tim Gunn, Victoria Beckham, Angela and Rosita Missoni, Iris Apfel, Beth Ann Hardison, the photographer, Arthur Elgore, Bob Mackie, Zandra Rhodes, Billy Porter.
Wow, it goes on and on.
And the interviews are, I'm really, really proud of them, because it's not about this collection versus that collection. It's about, who are you? You know, for the most part, you're more than a name on a label. How did you do this? You know, all the people I've interviewed were not given the keys to the kingdom by their parents or relatives and said, okay, I'm retiring, you take over. They all built their businesses from nothing, from a passion and a dream and hard work.
I mean, yeah, that brings me to my next question, because I'm sure you've named some of the amazing people you've interviewed. I'm just wondering, you know, in your opinion, what are some of the like key leadership lessons you may have learned talking to these amazing leaders? Or maybe there's just something that they have in common that you noticed that, you know, helped them become so successful. Anything like that that you could share, I'm sure our audience would love to hear.
What I think people will be surprised to hear is that one of the common threads through almost all of these interviews is that their grandmothers were the most influential people in their lives. So many of these designers and people credit their grandmother for being the one who supported them, who believed in them,
oh my God,
and pushed
them
through.
Nice.
It's really wonderful. And, you know, and the common thread of a passion that they just didn't give up. When I interviewed Marc Jacobs and he talked about the bankruptcies for the third or fourth time, I said, you know, did you still work with the same lawyer? And he said, yes, but, you know, he wasn't persuaded. They were going to start up again and again and again, you know, and these people just have this inner passion to express themselves and what they want to do and how they see the world and how they see people dressing and what they have to say. And they do it, you know, and to listen to how they all did that is amazing. Leonard Lauder, you know, growing up with his mother in Corona, Queens, and, you know, and Estee making formulas in the kitchen sink until, you know, and I ask questions like, who did your first boxes? You know, how did you decide to package this stuff? You know, when Calvin Klein, when you got your first order, when you wheeled your coats up to Mildred Custin up at Best & Company or Bonwit Teller, you know, I said, who did you call? How much money did you need to start a business?
It's inspirational. I mean, if it really gives you the feeling that you could do anything. You know, if these people literally were in Queens at their sink making this stuff, I mean, it's unbelievable. So we talked a lot about your career, about leaders, but, you know, this award that we're talking about is about your leadership and you being a leader. So I want to ask you some questions around that. So I guess my first one is, and we talk about this a lot at Women in Retail, you know, can you talk a little bit about a time in your career when maybe you had a challenge or a setback, but you realized that actually it was instrumental to your growth? Because that's such a great leadership lesson, I think.
You know, I mean, there've been a few. You know, one of the first was when I was working on the wholesale side of the business for a company called Cinnamonware, and it was in 1412 Broadway, which ultimately was the same building that the CFDA was in years later that I went back to. But I was fired right around Christmas time. I hated the job, so it wasn't such a big deal, but I realized and I learned at that time for my own leadership skills that if I'm ever a boss and in charge, I will never fire people at this time of year when people are walking into buildings filled with trays of cookies and sweets and everybody's having a good time. And, you know, people are spending money buying gifts and doing whatever they're doing, that, you know, just do it way before the holidays or way after. Just, it was just cruel, you know, and I've had other times where, you know, setbacks where I've been working in companies where it was a boys club. You know, and it was before Me Too, and not that I was abused or anything like that. But long before I had the brains or the to go to HR and say, you know, he's not speaking very nicely to me, you know, or he's being a bully. And I mean, I didn't assert myself at times through the years. You know, and those were issues for me. But you know, I've learned to, you know, move on from that, as we all do.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I think what you just mentioned about the Christmas is empathy, the importance of being an empathetic leader and doing things that are not make people sad, you know? Okay. Couple more. So I know that I follow you on Instagram, and I know that you are out and about seemingly every day and every night in New York City.
More than I should be.
So I would love if you could share some maybe work life. I don't know if balance is the correct word, but work life integration tips or how you kind of keep your the pep in your step. I mean, I go out one night in the city and I'm exhausted. So.
Well, I'm tired. I have to admit that. But I think it's just the curiosity, you know, of in general about events and activities. I you'd be surprised at how many invitations are in my circular file under the desk that I throw out, you know, and invitations that I decline. But I go to things that friends are doing or people that I really like and respect and support and want to support them because, you know, that's important. That's what we're here to, you know, pay it back and play it forward. Like this week, I went to two nights at Joe's Pub supporting Ryan Rafferty, who's does these hysterical one man play, you know, well, there's a small little cast in some of them. He does sends up of the divas. He did Anna Wintour one night. The next night was Martha Stewart. I think tonight or was it last night he did Kris Jenner. And, you know, he becomes those women and the stories and the singing are, you know, but I love him. So I've got to go there and be there for him.
Yeah.
And all through my career growing up, I always would go to events and that's how you built up a network. And that's how you got to know so many people. You know, when you see people in person, you go, oh, you know, I need to talk to you about something. I have a project coming up. You know, it's so much easier and you make so much more progress than trying to get somebody to answer an email. You know, it used to be a phone call. Nobody calls anybody anymore. You know, it's an email. Now it's a text. And if they don't answer your text in 10 minutes, you know, you feel like you're lost into oblivion. And so you go to things, you know, and I used to learn how to produce better events and parties. I had a PR firm and I'd come back and I'd say, boy, they really blew it. They didn't have enough waiters. The coat check was in the completely wrong place. You go and you learn. And I have a good friend who's worked with me on and off for many, many years. And she used to say, I go to events with Fern and walk in her wake and collect the business cards, you know, and she'd stay in touch with all these people, you know. And then when I had young girls working for me and young guys for many, many years, I'd share with them the invitations of who wants to go to this. Somebody want to come with me, go to that. Now I've got a yoga class. Now I've got to go home and walk the dog. Now I'm, you know, always had some excuse. And I said, you know, that's not how you get ahead in this life. You meet people,
yeah.
You go out, you have to see and be seen. And it's how I stay relevant. You know,
yeah.
There are a lot of people my age who've left their jobs and careers and, you know, everybody goes, whatever happened to them? You know, are they still around? Are they still alive? You know, and at my age, I'm still out there doing that. I do get 7, 8 hours of sleep a night, or I sleep later in the morning because I don't need to be up
right
at 7 o'clock and, you know, at an office at 9 o'clock sharp.
Right, right, right.
So I have that flexibility. But otherwise, I'm home watching something streaming or something I've DVR'd and, you know, ordering food in. I mean, it's much more fun.
Yeah.
Going out and being everywhere.
Yeah, I agree. What are you most excited about in the world of fashion right now in retail? Is there anything that's really exciting you? You know, since you are out and about and you know a lot of people. And...
Well, you know, there are still stores that I miss that are no longer, you know, and that breaks my heart. I think that there's a lot of interesting things going on in fashion. I mean, I'm always out there interested in the emerging designers and who's new. I mean, even for 20 years of doing Fashion Week, the one question I always got every season was, who's new? Who's new? People are curious about that, as am I. I'm excited and optimistic about sustainability and how more and more designers now and retailers are paying attention to that. I don't think nearly enough or as important as they need to do. I mean, I really do think that that's a massive problem and opportunity in this industry. And if all the consumers would just not take that credit card out of their pocket until they found out, how something is made and where it's made and is it sustainable and are they using best business practices? I mean, that's what needs to change the dynamic and change the industry. So I'm, and I'm interested in all the new digital. I mean, I'm still terrified of what AI is doing. I know it's the next universe, but I honestly at some point feel like I'm just getting a little too old to understand how well that's working.
I hear you on that for sure. And that sounds great. I mean, I agree with all of that. Definitely sustainability. There's always a lot going on in fashion and retail. That's what's fun about the industry.
And I'm also, let me add, excited about come May, I think it's May, to be on the lookout for this extraordinary Japanese magazine called Super. It's a real
Ooh.
fashion art magazine. And I'm going to be a cover and feature.
Oh, great. That's
So people
exciting.
will see images of me that they go, is that Fern?
Oh, I cannot wait. So we're gonna end with something that we like to do at Women in Retail often, and that is our rapid fire questions. So we just have five, or no, we have six actually. I'm just gonna ask you them. Just think of the first thing that comes to your mind, and we'll take it from there. Favorite book?
It's a fascinating book called A Thousand White Women
Ooh, that's
by Jim Fergus. It's really, when I first read it, I actually called friends of mine who president of UTA, and I said, how do I, can somebody buy the screenplay to this? How do I buy the rights to this book?
wow.
And because it's such a good book for women, and I see women's parts in it who are
Oh,
of all
wow.
different ages. It's so good.
Oh my God, that's amazing. Okay, favorite movie?
It's going to be corny, but Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, that's perfect for you, though. I love that. Hobby. Do you have hobbies? I mean, you're so
I mean, I
busy.
don't really have hobbies. I mean, I years ago I'd say maybe gardening, maybe
Yeah,
cooking, but
right.
gardening's harder now because I can't bend up and down so much. My back is killing me. But I do like cooking in the country on the weekends.
Oh, that's nice. That sounds great. Well, we talked about your first sort of, you talked about your retail career, but what about your very first like job, even just as a teen or something?
I had summer jobs in, and I can't remember if there were two places that come to mind very quickly. And one was Simplicity Patterns,
Oh, I remember those.
and the other was Orbach's on 34th Street.
Oh my God,
So, I
yes.
mean, those were places that I had summer jobs.
That's great. So is there something surprising about you that you people might not know or find unusual?
Well, I think what people would find surprising is that I'm actually very nice and very sensitive. And a lot of people are just afraid of me because of the position I've had in the industry and think I'm standoffish. And when they all start to talk to me or meet me, they go, you're really very nice. And one of my mantras whenever I lecture or talk place to students or business groups, I always they say, what advice do you have for people? And I say, be nice.
Oh, that's
It's the most important thing. Nobody wants to spend their time working with people who are a pain in the butt and who think they're divas or deserve special treatment. You
right.
want to work with people that are nice.
It's so true. It's so simple, right?
Very simple.
And then lastly, do you have a favorite quote or mantra that you live by?
Well, the be nice is one, but
Yeah, that's true.
favorite quote is something my dad said years and years ago growing up. And he said, no two people should ever have to worry about the same thing.
Oh, I like that. That's
And that
interesting.
stood me great stead when I was in the middle of chaos in the tents, and people would look at me and I'd say, somebody else is worrying about that. I don't have.
That's great. That's great even for your personal life.
But anything, yeah.
So funny, the wise comments we hear from our family, our parents, and that stick with us.
And also, if I could share that on March 19th is my next 92Y fashion icon at 92Y, and I'm interviewing Todd Snyder.
Oh, great. Yes, I did see that. We will definitely promote that in our on our network.
The people can get tickets at 92ny.org.
Okay.
And join us. It'll be a nice chat with him and about how he's developed his business from, you know, a small business to $100 million business and, you know, 15 stores and growing. And he's hot as a pistol right now.
Wow. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Fern. That was amazing. I really thought that was such a great interview, and I really appreciate you, your time and sharing all of your great stories with our audience. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. It was a pleasure being with you, Melissa.
Thanks for listening. For more information on this podcast, please go to womeninretail.com/podcasts for show notes. Women in Retail Talks is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Make sure to subscribe on our podcast channel page as well. If you've enjoyed this episode, please take a few moments to rate and review our show. Lastly, if you're a female retail leader interested in joining our community at Women in Retail Leadership Circle, visit womeninretail.com/apply. Thanks, and until next time, this has been Women in Retail Talks.